Do note that the views expressed in Thinking It Through do not necessarily represent the views of Good News Community Radio. The views expressed in Thinking It Through are meant to serve as a challenge to your beliefs, whatever they may be, and to see how the Christian worldview stands in light of other worldviews.
Welcome back to Thinking It Through, and we are continuing with a relevant study of the Book of Daniel as apocalyptic literature, the kind of literary genre that surfaces when the people of God, the faith community, face trials and tribulations at the hand of secular kingdoms and forces. It is a revelation of the ultimate triumph of God's kingdom over all the kingdoms of man. In spite of the fierceness of the world empires, they will all be subdued by the awesome power of God's reign over the hearts of men. Here's Dr. Gregory Denation, resident minister at Juvenile Mission, in part 3 of Facing the Furnace.
Hi folks, welcome again to another discussion of the Book of Daniel. We had already labeled this book as the fiery furnace, testifying to the grace of God and the power of God in the fiery furnace. As you know, Daniel's friends landed up in the fiery furnace because they uncompromisingly stood for the truth and they refused to be subjected to idolatry. Now we read in Daniel 1, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. It's important to remember that for some years the prophets of God had warned the nation that if they persist in their sin and in their wickedness, God was going to bring the nations from the north against them and take them into exile. They were warned, but just like today, the people didn't pay much attention to these warnings. They actually, in many cases, they acted negatively towards these prophets. They would laugh at them and ridicule them and didn't pay much attention to them. And then finally the patience of God ran out, and Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came and besieged Jerusalem and took the people away into exile, and even helped himself to the articles from the temple of God, which was sacrilege and blasphemy. It was evil. And he placed all of these things in the temple of his God in Babylonia. He put all these treasures from Israel into his temple, the temple of his God. And what that meant symbolically was that the faith of Israel was now subjected to idolatry. The belief that the people had was now put under the control of the idols of Babylonia. That was a very, very bitter pill to swallow. This happened in the third year of Jehoiakim, king of Judah's reign. Now, if we go back, just for the sake of putting this into context, the Babylonian kings that reigned from around about 626 BC to 539 BC were the following. First of all, you had Nabopolassar. He reigned, he was in Babylon, he reigned from 626 to 605 BC. He was followed by Nebuchadnezzar. So Nebuchadnezzar reigned immediately after Nabopolassar, and he reigned 605 BC to 562 BC. So it's around about half a millennium before the coming of Christ. Nebuchadnezzar was followed by Amel-Marduk, and he reigned from 562 to 560, which wasn't very long, 2 years. When he was deposed, he was followed by Neriglissa, and he reigned from 560 to 556 BC. That's about 4 years, only slightly longer than Amel-Marduk. And then he was followed by Labashi Marduk, which was 556, and I think he reigned for a few months. Then he was followed by Nabonidus. Now, Nabonidus, he reigned from 556 to 539. Just to give you a backdrop, you understand the developments, the social, political developments of Babylonia in those days. Last time we saw that this first chapter of Daniel would be labeled recruited to serve. We saw that the king ordered Ashpenaz, which was his chief court official, to go and scout out some talent amongst the Israelites. He had to look for people from the royal family. They had to be from the nobility. He was looking for quality people. They had to be without any physical defect. They had to be good looking. They had to show aptitude, you know, quick thinking. They had to be well qualified, broad knowledge. They had to be informed, well informed, quick-witted, quick to understand. And they were then to be trained so that they could serve in the king's palace. It's as if the king wanted to take the cream of the intellectuals amongst the Hebrews, that he could therefore take advantage of their skills and abilities to build his own kingdom. Then we read, and this was the first challenge which they were going to face, the king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that they were to enter the king's service. So this is their apprenticeship. This is their schooling that they had to go through. They had to have a diet, a very strict diet, and they had to have wine from the king's table. Now, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah from Judah were part of the group that was taken aside and, you know, given this training. It said they were to learn the language and they were to learn the literature, probably the history as well, of the Babylonians. They were also given new names. Daniel got the name Belteshazzar. Hananiah was called Shadrach. And Mishael was called Meshach. And Azariah was called Abednego. Now, remember, they were religious Jews. They were dedicated and devoted, faithful followers of Yahweh, the God of Israel. Now they were going to be subjected to the culture and the milieu, the experience of the Babylonians, which was deeply idolatrous. It was challenging to them. Now we read in verse 8 of chapter 1, Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself in this way. It was a stand that he had taken, and an encouragement to us that whenever you face secular society, like we are doing now in our own country and in the world worldwide, then we have to be faithful to the ways of God. We have to be faithful to the kingdom of God. We must take our stand. Because, you know, God can intervene and he can make a way for us, because we read in verse 9 of chapter 1, God had caused the official to show favor and sympathy to Daniel. But the official told Daniel, "I'm afraid of my lord the king who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would then have my head because of you." And what we find is that Daniel then turned to this God and said, "Well, why don't you test us?" Now, what is problematic is that today many people have instituted what they call a Daniel fast, as if this was a religious practice which God had sanctioned, when nothing could have been further from the truth. In fact, Daniel didn't fast. He continued to eat according to his conscience. So it's not that he fasted. It's not an institution of a fast. This was a period of the testing of his faith so that he would not compromise and submit to any form of idolatry. There's nowhere here that you see, like, for example, Holy Communion that is instituted by the Lord, that this practice should now become a ritual or a ceremony or something that is done in the Christian church. People are just losing it. They start doing things that are not biblical and not endorsed by God at all. It is an error. Now, just to complete what we highlighted last time, you remember I said you must get a piece of paper, clean piece of paper, blank paper if you can, and put it down sideways so it's in landscape format. And on the left-hand side in the middle, right against the margin, you draw a little block, which is maybe 30 or 40 millimeters by 50 or 60 millimeters. You have to check on how you can do it so it fits on the page. And it stands by itself, sort of in the middle. Then right next to it, you draw another block on the same line. And right next to that, you draw another block. So you've got three blocks going up to the middle of the page on the left-hand side. Now, above the second block, you draw another block so that it's just above the second block that you had put there. And below the second block, you put another block as if it's on a third line below the middle line. So you have a middle line, three blocks in the middle line, and that will be labeled 1, 3, and 6, and above the number 3, which is the second block you had drawn, I hope I'm not confusing you now, you will have the second block on top, so that would be the first line on top, and then you'd have the fourth block, which is below the third block, the line at the bottom. The first one is called recruited to serve. The one number 2, which is on top now, will be the king's dream. Below that will be the fiery furnace, and below that will be Nebuchadnezzar's pride. Next to that, at the bottom, you'll have Belshazzar's pride. Above that, you will have, in the next block, the lion's den, and above that, you will have Daniel's vision. I hope that is clear. If not, you can get hold of us, and we can somehow help you to understand this. If this was a television broadcast, you would be able to see it clearly. But what we have now, if I can just recap, on the left-hand side, you have a little block which you have drawn, which you call the first block, block number 1. And next to it, you have block number 3, the fiery furnace. And next to it, on the same line, you have the lion's den, block number 6. Now, above 3 and 6, you have the king's dream and Daniel's vision, two blocks next to each other, like blocks 3 and 6. And then you have Nebuchadnezzar's pride and Belshazzar's pride as blocks 4 and 5 at the end. Hopefully, that will work out for you. See you next time.
And that was Dr. Gregory Denation in part 3 of Facing the Furnace, a relevant study of the Book of Daniel as apocalyptic literature. Don't miss part 4, same time tomorrow, only on Good News Community Radio, the station that brings you hope.
If you have any feedback or queries regarding Thinking It Through, please email it to thinkingitthrough@gncr.org.za. You can find the live stream, GNCR mission statements, and more at gncr.org.za.